How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI Podcast.
Yeah, welcome in, everybody. Show 516622. Welcome into the DOI Podcast, the most meaningful crypto conversation on the internet this evening. That's because it involves you. We've got several news stories, A to Z in the news. Australia's first ETF, kind of a bummer. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about it together. How about some CBDC news? Definitely something to talk about there. Corey, how are you this evening?
Ooh, I'm doing fantastic, per usual, looking at all the news, just wondering how many people there are in the world just doing things nonstop.
Well, A to Z is doing a lot. They stay busy. Man, it's been a busy couple days in news. There's a ton of news stories in there. Hey, if you're checking us out on Clapper or you're on Facebook and you would like to join the chat, come over here to Discord and you can get into the chat area and ask some questions if you have any.
Yeah, so apparently what they're trying to do, it looks like A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz, for those unfamiliar with the jargon there, it looks like they're trying to say the world fits between A and Z. It's kind of the catch I'm seeing. So for those who don't know, A16Z backed an Indian crypto exchange. Launched as a first rupee-based index. So that's pretty cool. So
I didn't realize that there wasn't an index based off of rupees before.
You know, finally, India. They listen. You know, we said it here first. For months, we've been saying, India, come on, get with it. And here they are, getting with it, day after day, right? Just new announcements all the time. So it's pretty encouraging. You know, India's got they are the single biggest market in the world, correct?
Yeah, one could argue, depending on what metrics you give them.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing, just a huge market. So, and they're making big moves. Excited to see it.
Yeah, and so I thought that this was a really interesting tweet by Ashish Singhal, is that until now, investors in India had to rely on international indices based on U.S. dollar. But these indices do not give a true picture of the Indian market and miss the supply-demand dynamics of India's growing investor base. I guess it would have to be extremely hard. Like, if every single time that, for those of us who are in the States, like, you didn't get a chance to actually buy bread in dollars, you had to buy them in rupees? Like, just flip the picture on that. You're like, oh, wait a second. How much is a rupee compared to a dollar again? And is that... okay, is the exchange rate the same as it was yesterday, or is it above or below? Should I wait to buy my bread until later, or should I buy it this morning? Like, it just makes things so much more complicated.
Yeah, yet a large portion of the world deals with that on a daily basis.
Truly, truly.
Very interesting. You know, that in itself, we could spend an entire evening talking in that, because, you know, we're Americans. Right. So I think we have a little bit of maybe a skewed perspective on it, at least a bias. But you have to start talking about fairness at some point. Right. Like, humanity is expanding in a different way than it was 100 years ago. And we have to start talking about what's best for everybody in each country. Oh, interesting times. Right. These are huge, huge conversations.
Yeah, these are huge conversations, but once again, just the opportunity, because looking at this news article here, one of the largest exchanges in the world says it has 18 million users registered, you know, CoinSwitch Tuber has 18 million users registered on its trading app, but you think about India, 18 million users is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, if you just give them a tool that they can use, I mean, seems like you can have 80 million users and not in that long of a time period.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's just flipping a switch, right? You flip a switch on 30 or 40 million people. On top of the fact that India, I think by and large, is a tech hungry country, right? Like, they are into the latest tech. Most of them are on mobile phones. That's kind of everywhere. But they're very quick to adopt.
They are mostly on mobile phones, but I think the nuance to add to that is that they're mostly on mobile phones and skipped a lot of other forms of technology. Right. Like, they don't have the same kind of access or prevalence percentage-wise to having the kind of digital infrastructure like desktop computers, for instance. And there's a lot of countries in Africa that are the same way. And so if you go straight to mobile phones, smartphones, then you start creating apps and using native apps to smartphones to do all kinds of things that you might have thought of, like, let's say, desktop and banking. Instead of logging into, you know, US Bank on a desktop, everything was built mobile first.
That's right.
And they build their entire infrastructures around that, like how they interact with each other around that. It's very different.
Yeah.
Than just if you kind of have like, okay, here's the mobile app version. The mobile app kind of sucks, but you know, it's the desktop version's better. It's like the mobile app has to be great. It has to be.
Who wins that in the end, though? Right. Who wins that in the end? Because there's going to be industry right now that's pushing to keep desk, you know, your computer on your desk. And at the same time, you have emerging markets all over the world that the easiest readily available technology is a cell phone. So is that in the end is going to win and it's going to push everything into a cell phone, into just a condensed version? I mean, we see technology get smaller and smaller, right? So that is the way of the future. Is that your thought?
I mean, it is the way of the future, but I heard something the other day that I thought was funny. And so I wanted to look it up just for reference in this podcast so I don't completely misspeak. Although I'll probably misspeak from an article that I haven't fact checked because I looked it up on the fly. But apparently, according to this article from a year ago, about May 3rd of 2021, 1.5 million people are still paying for AOL internet service. A monthly subscription. Yeah. Oh. So.
Or AOL did. I thought that died on like the gas station counter, right? Where you used to be able to get AOL cards and scratch them off, and Net Zero cards, scratch them off. That's not done yet?
No, it's not done entirely. So what they did is they transitioned over their business model to try to get people to say, oh, well, now you need technical support for the internet and identity theft software, which, by the way, you can get free in a lot of places from banks and things like that, if you didn't know. But there are still, even still, just the internet itself, there are still dial-up subscribers. Now, the number is in the low thousands, according to this source, but still. The point being is that it takes a really long time for something to die because there are people that just
hold on.
They will have that. They'll just hold on. They'll get that haircut at 37 years old and they'll have it until the day they die.
So you're telling me right now there's some 80-year-old fighting with his dial-up modem on his Commodore 64 to try to check his bank statement. And and mad at his 40-year-old son, mad that it won't work and convinced that it's the internet's fault, right?
Kudos to that son. So,
yeah. Okay. So moving on. Do Kwon, unlikely to face criminal charges from the U.S. This is what experts are saying, which is, you know, he was involved in the Terra Luna, the stable coin, the crash. You know, some would say that it was the shutter that brought us to where we are today in crypto. So it's interesting that they're saying he's unlikely to face any charges here.
Yeah. I personally tend to believe that he shouldn't, or at least that I wouldn't if I were in that situation. And like most people, I lost a bit on Luna, like $900. For me, I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where $900 is still uncomfortable, but it wasn't like life-changing. And for a number of people, $900 is life-changing. A lot of people in the world.
Yeah.
So I can understand why they would have a different lens, even if they don't think that there was intent for fraud, even if they don't think that it was malicious, why they might want to go about civil charges at least, which is, you know, what they're looking at here, is they don't think that there's going to be criminal charges, but probably civil charges are going to be likely.
Sure.
But to that point, clearly he didn't win in this scenario. Do Kwon did not come out the other side filthy rich. This isn't like one of those, you know, pump and dump things where all of a sudden,
yeah, just like bad decisions.
It's not like what happened with Shiba. And I'm not saying that what did or didn't happen with Shiba, but you have a founder who's just like, nope, I'm out. And a pseudonymous founder is just like, all right, I'm out. And then they disappear. And you're kind of like, okay, I have to question what the motivations were. If the crash was directly after that, and then that right. person disappeared with a bag full of money, then criminal charges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, Shiba didn't crash somehow, which I get
That is interesting.
Community is the powered around the community, not the, you know, founder. But at the same time, he was just trying something new. They're just trying something new. It didn't work, and clearly he lost billions.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, and that's kind of
I'm pretty sure he's sad too.
That and that's probably the only thing that's going to keep him from facing criminal charges anywhere, right? Is that it was basically a lot of bad decisions that he held on to, like they weren't budging, and then it bottomed out, but he didn't make anything. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, you know, and we see this huge push for stable coins, right? So now there's legislation happening everywhere. And this is the thing I think we need to be aware of as a community. And one of the reasons that we do this is that there has to be a general awareness that this is coming at rapid speed, right? A lot of us don't see it on a daily basis because we're not interacting with it yet, but it is coming rapid. And there are governments all over the world right now that are making all kinds of rules to cover all of this. So it's definitely interesting and something to keep up to or up to date on.
Yeah. I just dropped a poll in the podcast chat here in Discord. So for those of you who are in Discord, you can jump in there. And those who are listening on other channels, like Phil said, you can join us on Discord to interact. But I threw a poll up there. Do you think that Do Kwon should face charges? Tell us what you think. If you do, I would definitely love to hear why, for sure. Because clearly, whenever billions of dollars get wiped out of a market and debatably have caused what happened, the crypto winter, I mean, there are other factors, of course. But at the same time, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, only because of how everything is so tied together. You wonder if one needed to happen before the other for the market, the traditional stock market, to come down and adjust. I don't know. There's a lot of play there, but let's move on. Labor Department, as they're overhauling crypto retirement kind of stuff, there's a lawsuit that's opened up saying basically they said, hey, if you're going to include cryptos, you just need to expect investigations, which is kind of, you know, I don't know. It's so double-minded, right? And we see this a lot of time with legislative bodies. But on one side, you've got Senate and Congress. You've got even the president is pushing through all these regulations to go ahead and get a firm grip on what's going on with cryptos. And then on the other side, you've got other departments saying, hey, if you involve them at all, just expect an investigation.
Yeah. So ultimately, at the end of the day, there's two questions to be had here. The first question is, should cryptocurrency-based investments require investigation by those who are providing them? And then the second question is, should they be treated any differently? Meaning that if you say that those offering cryptocurrencies, the new asset class, need to be investigated, what you're saying is that there is a certain level of susceptibility to fraud and misuse in the financial market. So what does it matter if it's cryptocurrency or not? Wouldn't you just investigate all of them? And so now I'm not going to draw conclusions there, although I kind of in my head very quickly could tend to if I let myself. But what are your thoughts on that, Phil? Like, first off, do you think that there should be investigations to it? And, you know, yes or no? And if so, how do you think that ties into other financial instruments?
So on this, because it's for retirement stuff, I think yes. You know, if people are going to put their money into a retirement account, that is something that they're counting on. And if that's not regulated and if that falls apart, to be quite honest with you, all of those retirements would fall on that burden would fall across society or the whole society. So I think that, you know, I think that's the responsible thing to do probably as it pertains to retirements, to be as strict as they can be to ensure that they'll be as safe as possible.
I think that there's definitely some strong validity to that as well on my side, because I think we are all questioning whether or not we're going to have retirement by the time it all shakes out.
Who's questioning?
I think we're all questioning that. Anybody under 60 is questioning whether or not there's going to be retirement funds for them.
I mean, unless you take care of it yourself, right? There's ways to structure our own finances and start to prepare for retirement. But I really don't have any faith that that Social Security system will be around. I guess some innovation, right? As we see what's getting ready to happen, I mean, we understand that in order for one system to come up, the other system is going to have to be absorbed by it. So I'm not exactly sure how that all plays out, right? When you enter that much and you start changing the metrics up.
Yeah. Well, one hopes that we get it figured out, because there are so few that have any type of retirement plan, crypto or otherwise. Mm-hmm. So, and then on top of that, you think about what's happening with the markets in general, the value of stock as opposed to value of fiat currency, and how unequally, or let me rephrase that, how the lack of diversification in most people's portfolios, it's very easy for them to take whatever 401k plan that was blanket attached, you know, given to them by whatever company that they work for, that's really heavily invested in some old-timey style stocks and indices, and they could lose all of it. So not to say that they will, and we hope that they won't, and there's a lot of effort to be done in both directions to destroy that system in a bad way and to prop it up and support people in another way. But even those people who are trying to retire well, I wonder how well they're going to be set off as well.
Well, I think that for the ones that are paying attention, and this is just my opinion, the ones that are paying attention to the transition right now, and they're able to find the sweet spot, right? Because we obviously can't put everything at risk and overinvest in something. But if we stay diversified and we see that the innovation that's happening in the Web3 space, and we understand that that economic system is to follow, then we get in on the beginning of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, Web3 can be a lot more interesting than you might think. It doesn't have to be all pictures of monkeys. It can actually be real infrastructure projects, because we can all have, you know, open conversations to say, especially if you're in the States and in many parts of the world, a lot of the infrastructure is deteriorating or is not able to support the population.
Yeah.
And that's clean water, clean soil, you know, healthy soil. There's over farming, there's lack of nutrients in the soil, there's access to sustainable energy, sustainable in a way that is affordable and clean. And the list goes on and on. And there are ways both in the Web3 space and with not in the Web3 space to get engaged in those projects. But looking into the future and diversifying the bag into kind of all the different scenarios, or at least as many as you can comfortably in your mind, that's going to be the ticket. But so few people do. Like, just like, you know, the guy talking to his 40-year-old son about his dial-up internet not working. There's so many people that just, they got their pension or whatever, or they got their 401k, and, you know, they haven't done anything to it. They haven't thought about it at all. Like, all just dropped to zero, they'd have no idea, because some company that they're heavily invested into became irrelevant because the markets have changed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's move on to the next story. Biden, game-changing White House crypto plans could have serious repercussions for Bitcoin and Ethereum, and they're really looking at the environmental impact. And, you know, as we're reading through this, Corey, I read a little bit into it. I have some real questions, right? Because we hear this as this like mantra that is being kicked around all the time. Bitcoin's bad for the environment. Ethereum's bad for the environment. And it's all about the energy usage, right? Well, look at all of the energy that is put forth when creating a regular fiat currency, right? Is there no offset here? I mean, does crypto not get some of these magical carbon credits to give it a leg up? I mean, look at all the fuel, the trucks, the paper, the buildings, all of these things that have to be utilized just to make fiat paper currency a reality. And all of a sudden, Bitcoin mining is the worst thing that's ever happened to the planet. And we need to regulate everything so that there's no pollution.
Yeah, well, to that point, to go down that rabbit hole real quick. So, of course, you have to make the currency. You have to transport the currency. You have to store the currency. You have to exchange the currency. And even at a smaller level, your exchange, like your storage personally, and then as you pay for goods and services, they've got to put it in the cash registers, and then they got to drive it to the bank. And like any of you have ever owned a business before, you know that, or worked for one where you had to handle the money, like especially if it's a cash business, every day you're going up to you're driving to the bank with your little pocket full of money and coins, and then they're taking the time and energy and the lights in the building to interact with it to make sure that's right, and somebody else somewhere else is auditing that system to make sure that it's working, and you have to then take your paper receipt and then keep track of your receipts and then all these other papers and then do the accounting later. And it's like the ripples go on and on.
That was like 11 or 12, right? Yeah, like what you just rattled off there. And how is that? I mean, I guess someone would have to show me the magic math, okay? Because it just does not seem like the energy consumption is equal mining Bitcoin to all of that.
Yeah, I mean, just think about like how much money and energy is spent people driving around and refilling ATM machines, building the ATM machines, the factories that build the ATM machines. I'm just thinking random stuff, not the materials that have to, for the extra infrastructure that's required for them to house the money and for them to transport. It's like the list goes on. Hold on,
You hit the nail on the head though, right? Because there is already an existing infrastructure that's being propped up. Excuse me, I almost said protected. Right? Because you've got this huge infrastructure out there. And so the same, I'm trying not to go on a rant. You know, the same folks that are warning us about the dangers of crypto mining and that, oh my gosh, it's killing the planet, are the same ones that say that this system is the way that this is it right over here. This is the one we have. And that one's horrible because it pollutes. Ours doesn't. Interesting argument, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an interesting argument. And on top of that, it's like most things, that's kind of down one path. And then, like most things, you're having this side argument about whether or not, you know, purple or green, and you're going back and forth and back and forth about it, not saying that they don't both have their legitimate cases as far as energy goes. But then you're like, wait a second, where's, like, if we were actually going to try to tackle this and say that there's an energy consumption pollution issue, like if that's what you cared about, you go, what about international shipping? And yeah, like pause for just a second and then go, wait a second. So if we didn't have to transport our grains 7,000 miles and we got somewhat more community-based, not entirely, we don't separate off from one another. It's not some weird communal, like you only live in Illinois, therefore you can only buy goods in Illinois kind of thing. Although I think some of that is helpful to the community. But to be somewhat more community-minded than not just ship things like back and forth and back and forth and back and forth across the ocean in these shipping containers for the sake of just purchasing more and more goods. And then, if you actually look at the amount of energy and waste there, you're like, oh, well, that's where it's at. Like, that's where it's at. But nobody wants to have those kinds of conversations. It would take very little change.
We do. We want to have those kind of conversations. Because right now they're bringing legislation all over the place, including New York City, right? We just had this story the other day that no new Bitcoin miners. They just want to lock it down, right? Well, that's a problem. They don't want to have that conversation's not being had, but this one is very quick to be had of we're going to lock it down because of all the environmental damage it does.
Yeah.
I mean, how much...
And I understand.
How many... Does mining a Bitcoin create... I mean, how many 12-year-olds are stuck in a house all day playing a video game during the summer? Like, what does that use? And we don't hear a campaign against that. I'm not trying to start a campaign against video games. I'm just saying, is this a straw man argument that we're being given?
I mean, it's a legitimate argument, but the problem is that it's complicated to compare. It's easy to simplify it down to a metric that says, look at all the energy that's used, therefore it's bad. And it's harder to kind of say, okay, what is the comparative ecosystem actually use in and of itself and compare that. And then to go, okay, this comparing and contrasting the two together, what are the added benefits to society potentially one way or the other? And then to extrapolate what those second and third level benefits or detriments actually mean to the environment and to energy use. It's too hard for most people to really digest. So what they do is they get it in a snippet that says, like, oh, Bitcoin mining takes all the energy of the Netherlands, you know, the comparative amount. But
right,
it's hard to compare those different things and to understand that energy, no matter what form it's in, is essentially the same. Mostly your electric energy or much of your electric energy comes from coal anyway. So it's no different than running freight liners on coal and things like that as you kind of work through, and then need to go the differences from one type of resource of fuel to another and kind of how you use those. And then you try to compare and contrast against industries, and it just, people get lost. So it's just easy to just say Bitcoin's bad, shut it down. And there are some legitimate arguments to it. The problem is just hard to have them.
Right.
Just hard to have them.
They're finding it easy to make regulations. Yeah. I mean, that seems to be
they are quick
to do it, even before there's maybe a really clear understanding. And I'm not making really an argument saying that Bitcoin or that mining isn't costly. But it seems you should have the argument at the conversation, not even an argument, but the conversation about the detriment on both sides. And is it really just a wash, right? If you get rid of one, but you bring in the other, I don't know. It's pretty interesting, though.
So there's some great conversation going on in the podcast chat. So first off, Huka says, thank you for worrying about the environment. Huka worries about the environmental cost of shipping as well, too. D-Man J says it's apples and oranges, which it very well is, which makes it hard to compare and contrast. Galactic Blaze says, does make the valid point of saying a mining rig uses a lot more power than general use gaming, which is true. And to that point, D-Man says that we do have a solar system, so he doesn't necessarily care. But the to that point, for the energy there. But to that point, Galactic Blaze brings up a good point. We're spending a lot of time talking about renewable energy, but what people don't fully recognizes that it's not so much about the renewable energy, although it is, but it's about the storage of energy, and that you can't really transfer energy over long distances. And being able to use energy locally, to not lose the energy by having to transfer it, and to be able to store it more effectively, those things are as impactful, if maybe not more so, than just how you actually generate the energy to start with.
Yeah. That's right.
So
what percentage of it is lost?
Complicated, right? Conversation.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. What percentage is lost?
It is. Well, here's an easier conversation to take on. You guys ready? Russia says that they basically have a new alternative to the SWIFT system. Now.
No.
Now.
I wonder.
Now. So, you know, Russia, this ties in because of the energy, right? That's the reason that Russia has any juice at all right now, because on the world stage, there's a lot of people that don't like them, but they still are making some big moves. And this is one of them, right? Declaring an alternative to the SWIFT system, which is a payment system that banks use and other payment institutions use to settle debts.
Yeah, which clearly Russian banking institutions have been disconnected from as a part of sanctions. So they would want to create their own alternative. Now, I found it interesting that they did it on the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're clearly trying to make a play here.
Yes. Well, they've got to, right? Because, you know, sanctions can stick around for a while. A conflict may come and go. It may settle down. But I think that countries will be very reluctant to release the sanctions that they've already put on them. So I think that they are in a fight for survival. And I think they're going to have to make these moves enabled just to survive.
Yeah. I mean, from their perspective, at the end of the day, no matter what side of a war you're on, and we have to remind ourselves that most of the time people on either side of a war think that they're the heroes.
Sure.
Historically speaking. But no matter which side of the war you're on, the people that are involved, the people that aren't involved are people. and a lot of them are getting hurt. Now, not saying that's a complicated conversation, right? But the point being is that there are Russian people who are innocent to all of this, no matter what your perspective is on the rest of it. And to not get access to the kinds of systems that are going to allow them to support themselves, something like this could be helpful. Now, that said, that the goal is, as you put pressure on the people put the pressure on the governments stop doing whatever the other governments don't want them to do anymore. And now, which is a weird way, whenever you think about it like that, to control a government is to really hurt its people to the point where those people uprise and tell the government to stop. It's kind of weird whenever you kind of process it in that manner. Or it's kind of unethical. Might wonder what the alternative is, but the point being is it is. So, yeah, I mean, there they are. They've got to figure something out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to just sit around and sit on a bunch of oil during, you know, $5 a gallon gas prices and or $7 a gallon if you're in Europe or whatever it might be and just do nothing.
Yeah. They're going to have to make the adjustment. So let's move on. Central banker from Brazil explains how CBDC systems help prevent bank runs. And here it is, right? You want the adoption of different central bank digital currencies. This is, I believe, how they will sell it to pretty much every parliament, that any of those kind of situations, right? Any states that are going to have to push through legislation to get CBDCs introduced, I believe this is going to be the mechanism to use, because this is a big problem, or can be a big problem. And I do see how it can prevent or help solve for a run on the bank.
Yes, I do too. So now that said, Fabio Arujo, the economist at the central bank who's in charge of the country's central bank digital currency work, revealed a recent paper published by the Bank for International Settlements is where you can find all that.
I'm sure it's a light read. Implemented, I'm sure it's a really light read.
Oh, I'm sure. And it says that once the CBDC is implemented, the monetary authority will have greater control over the population's money, and the central bank will be able to prevent bank runs and set other limitations on citizens' access to money.
There it is.
So I'm going to pause for just a second, because I feel like this, there could be a conversation on just that statement. Whenever you hear this, and so in the podcast chat, I'd love to get some feedback here. I'm going to actually copy paste this thing. Just why not? I'm going to copy paste this puppy and I'm going to drop it right in the podcast chat. You read this. Tell me how you feel about what's being said here.
That's how we feel about it.
Well, that's, I mean, could be. I don't want to lead anybody here. I'm actually looking for some feedback on it.
That's just how myself and producer Ethan feel about it. That's a little bit unnerving. And I think specifically what they're talking about is eliminating a run on the bank just by freezing it, right? But how is that any different than what can be done now? I mean, they already have that capability of just, of slowing it down, or I don't know. That's challenging for me to accept that as just the blanket. Oh, okay. That's fine.
Yeah. So to the point of the bank run, I think it is important to clarify, as Galactic Blaze has done in the chat. The idea of the bank run is that the amount of fiat currency that's in circulation is actually far less than the balances on,
right,
you know, in the account. It says 34,000, but there's actually only 3%.
Right.
Some people will say 10%, but if you actually extrapolate that out a couple levels deeper, it's actually just a couple percent. So in that way, you got to, people want to go from one to the other. There is going to be an issue with the bank run, because what do you do whenever you don't have enough currency to transition from one to the other? And CBDCs allow you to take what looks like digital currency in a bank and then transfer it over to an actual tokenized asset.
Yep.
So there is legitimacy to that on the bank run side of things. I guess to me, which would be a real issue, and that's an issue. Is an ethical issue.
Yeah.
So now that said, where I really keyed in on when, and you probably noticed it in my tone too. I kind of gave it away a little bit because it kind of was digesting it as reading. But the whole part about the monetary authority having a greater control over the population's money. So I want to pause for a second and ask the question, if they control your money, what do they control of you? Like, if they have control of your money, you know, what other things do they now have control of? Okay. So, Phil, I'm going to ask you that question just because as people are typing in the chat. Like, so if they can control your money, what else can they
everything.
Control?
Right, everything. They can control everything. So I see see that as being a problem.
Yeah, I would too. And ultimately, too, in the podcast chat, we're getting... Jackal says the ability to track every move, every time you spend a record is made. Yep. Yeah. T. Myers, who could both say everything. Aridow says money is power, is freedom. It's true.
Yep.
B. Man J says with banks having more control over the money, they actually have control over the government. Yes. Galactic Blaze does put the point, it depends on what kind of control it enables to reverse any malicious transaction, which is also good. Wait. CBDCs aren't inherently bad, so that is good. Hang on, Phil. It sounds like you were going to say something there.
Well, it's what technology is that we see being developed that has a promise of security is used like that, though. Right? So you build this mechanism in, and sure, at the very beginning, it's going to be only to prevent a bank run. Right? But that's a slippery slope. And I don't know. I do see the need to be able to prevent a bank run because... you know, in reality, we're using digital dollars now, you guys. So a bank run is not really even practical. As long as the system remains, as long as you've got power, you're using digital dollars now. So it's not that big of a leap to think that the CBDC will enter in soon, and then they'll just transfer it over so there isn't a bank run.
Well, and to that point, so I think I understand the use case for the bank run, and that to me is, and I know you're in agreement here, Phil, is not the issue. It's to me what's most concerning is not just the fact that, you know, an economist at the Central Bank of Brazil and every other government everywhere talking about CBDCs will casually talk about, like, it's the way in which they talk about it. It's that they'll casually talk about greater control over people's, you know, the population's money, but they don't say, like, for the positive reasons. They don't say we can do control over the money to only do this, that, and the other. I will occasionally see where they'll mention a benefit or two, but then they go on to say, like, four other control mechanisms.
Yeah.
Like being able to, like, you know, have set limitations on citizens' access to money. Like, okay, well, so if you agree with the party or don't agree with the party, you get access to your money, or, you know, and the list goes on and on and on, and you go, well, that's just crazy, right? There would be no governments who are doing any of that. And Canada just did with the whole trucker protest.
Right.
And so they stopped the movement of money for what they said, quote unquote, was right-wing politics, which regardless whether or not it was or wasn't, you're part of a democracy and you're not a totalitarian government, you don't get to stop down protests. Like, you don't get to control the flow of money. And it's already happening. We're seeing, of course, China. Yeah, you know,
sure.
But you see the flow in, and it's, you look anywhere, you're seeing it over and over and over again, and people are just casually talking about how that's a powerful mechanism for our government. Oh, well, we want to be able to control how you can spend your money, whether or not you have money, where you get access to it. We want to be able to control everything you do and make sure that your behaviors are in line with what we deem as fit. Well, the problem is that nobody's right.
Right.
Like,
well, and that's, like, but who's lobbying for the people, right? Like, this stuff always comes, this has to come from lobbyists, from banks, from who, I mean, you ask 9 out of 10 people are going to say, well, no, that's not a good idea. Explain it to them just as much as we have. And they're like, no, that's probably not a good idea. And you think that these people that are saying it's a good idea don't understand all of the intricacies that they're talking about? They understand it on a way deeper level, and they're still saying that's a great idea.
Yeah, well, and so the problem is that, like all things, is that it could be very beautiful. I mean, it could be extraordinarily beautiful. Like, you could make sure that the kind of aid that is needed for people, like in, whether that's food or education or shelter, you know, all the things that we're worried about as a government, especially as we get towards a situation where people aren't going to be able to be valuable to an economic system. Like they just don't have the skill sets or the capacity to learn or physical capacity to for which to be valuable whenever we come into this age that we're already coming into of automation and machine learning. And so these people need targeted support. I mean, they need that. And being able to have a CBDC to give that is extraordinarily beautiful cause. Like that is brilliant. And there are a lot of things like that that CBDCs can do, and especially a lot of security and protection mechanisms. I mean, you could think about child sex trafficking, like things like there's things that you could control and protect and do in ways you could never do in our current system that would be glorious outcomes. The problem is that you could just as easily prop up another system to have even more control over where money and resources go that is clearly in a and is working through the issues of many might argue that there are many places in the world that the say of a few people with a lot of power and resources tend to sway where those where the actual the new resources go. So if we're still working through that issue and now we're adding even more control, like you know that it's not working the way that it should and you're adding even more control before creating the system, then I fear that you could end up with, you know, not all good outcomes.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's going to be important during this time for us to take the reins, so to speak, right? And get involved in these and start utilizing systems and propping up systems that work for the people, right? Because we're in a change. And I even skipped over the last story, Corey, in there and moved over to another one about the metaverse because you talked about an economy. And there is a new and emerging economy coming. Whether we choose to take part in it, that's going to be up to all of us. But it is being built now, and it is on the rise, and it is something that we're going to see. You know, Corey, where do you think metaverse is before it's touching everybody, right? Like I think today, even mature adults would say, who said, you know, 25 years ago or 20 years ago, I'm never getting involved in computers, or 15 years ago, I'm never getting Facebook or MySpace, I'm not getting it. We all have it now, right? We're all being affected by it in some way. And that transformation took 20 years. Corey, how long do you think it's going to be before the metaverse, the Web3 space, is going to transform in a way that it touches everybody?
I think in a way that they understand it, the way that Facebook touches everyone because they use it and they're on it, or until they stopped using it and use something else. But where they saw it directly, like Web2, they saw it directly in their life.
Yeah.
It took a long time, even though it was already affecting and changing everything about how they operated in their life for years. So like computers came along, and in the 70s, it completely revolutionized the way that transport happened and how you'd manage shipping routes. And that changed what was possible to be manufactured and turn in, even what kinds of goods you would get because of, you know, how long something need to be refrigerated, and the list goes on and on and on. And people don't recognize, they didn't see any of it. They just thought, well, I don't have a computer. And so they didn't see computers as affecting their lives. They just all of a sudden saw that they had access to more goods and things were cheaper and life generally got better for, you know, advanced economies that happened to be going through that at that time. And then the internet came along and they didn't realize that there was these connections to all this, these databases of knowledge that were compounding and building and collaborating with one another. And they didn't see any of that. They were at best using dial-up internet, if that, to go on some chat room to talk about cats or something weirder.
Yeah.
But the point being is they weren't really using it at that. But at the same time, what it was doing in the background was allowing the level of innovation because of the ability to collaborate at scales never before seen between corporations and individuals and communities. Well, that's already happening in the Web3 space as well. And to the point where we talk about Russia having a blockchain alternative to the SWIFT system. Like, people may not think that Web3 and then metaverse, because that's where I'm getting to it, that it has a direct effect on their life, but because they're just like, cryptos are stupid. But whether or not they think crypto is stupid, what they don't recognize is that it's changing the face of a modern world war. Like, I want everybody to just pause on that for a second. Like, no matter what you think about all of this stuff, like, you're listening to this podcast, you're like, crypto is dumb, it has no utility. Like, Russia is in the middle of a war, and some would argue a proxy war. There's a lot at stake, and they're leveraging these tools.
Yeah.
On top of everything else we talked about, that was just how we started this podcast. We could list a thousand other things. Even if you're not seeing it directly in your life, if you don't see Metaverse directly in your life, but all of a sudden the way decisions are made, the way people meet in the background, the way goods and services are sold starts to happen, it's going to change your life. You may not see it for 20 years because there's like the people that are the early adopters, and then there's the people, once again, that have the same haircut for 40 years, right, that we talked about at the beginning of this. So it's already changing all of our lives. The fact that we're talking about the Metaverse, it's Facebook changed its name to Meta. They pivoted their model. They've been focusing on things like the Oculus Rift and other types of experience-based interfaces. Those things are already coming into play in other places that aren't the Metaverse. They've changed how they look at structuring social contact with one another because the fact that they're priming us all to go into this Metaverse. They're changing the way that they validate and look at authenticating accounts because of the fact that we're going into the Metaverse. It's already changing all of our lives.
Yep.
Now, yep. So, I think it'll take probably 20 years until your grandma's using it.
Well, hold on. It didn't take Facebook. It didn't take Facebook 20 years, and they're changing to Meta. Right. So they're going to be, they are one of the largest influences, and they're already going to be targeting and influencing people to switch over to, they're not going to do it yet. Right. Right now it's kind of a soft name. They've changed their name. But as we see it grow and as industry develops in there, like there are people hard at work right now trying to build out economies that work inside of the Metaverse. To take over displaced workers, right, that are displaced by robotics, by other technology. We have a growing population and less work to be done. And that's just what's happening, right? So there are teams of people at work right now all over the world developing economies inside of here. And my thought would be 10 years.
You know, I wanted to say 10 years, and that's also too what Hakeem said in the podcast chat. I'd be interested to hear the rest of the community, what timeline that you think.
Well, I know when you get there. When you get to the Metaverse, you're going to be able to find me as a Starbucks barista. Is that the right name?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to be working in Starbucks.
Yeah. Whenever you had to ask whether or not it was actually called a barista, I was really sold that that's what you're going to be doing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I heard. I heard it would be a great job. That's what I'm going to do. You know, it seems a little bit strange, but I'm going to do it.
Virtual coffees. Yeah. So to that point, I think that if I had to create a timeline now, and it will be fun to go back to this podcast and listen to it, I would have to say within 5 years, the Metaverse will have a noticeable impact on corporations.
Yep.
Noticeable. I don't think that's going to change the game on everything, but I think it'll be noticeable that there are little, basically it's like there's Metaverse seasoning that on a number of different dishes at a good chunk of different larger corporations. Right. Now, I think 10 years is where we can say that it's becoming useful to the general public, where most people would say that they see value in it and probably spend more and more time or at least more and more of their resources with it. And I see 20 years being to where it's like, you can't live without it, kind of where I've seen Facebook go. And I think Facebook was a little bit more viral because it created a certain level of social connection. Right. It wasn't possible before. It wasn't like it went from 1 to 2, it went from 0 to 1. Like, it was impossible for you to have those kinds of social interactions throughout all of history with that number of people.
Right.
And to be able to create that network. So to go from that to the next level up where you can, add a lot of cool features on it, that's cool and it's going to be beneficial, but I think it'll take 20 years for the level of nuance where your grandma feels like, or hey, in 20 years, you're going to be your grandma.
Thanks.
To where your peers whatever age you're at, like your peers, are going to feel like it's a requirement. Like they don't feel like they're connected to the outside world socially like they do with Facebook if they're not in the metaverse. That's my explanation. And it's not 20 years flat. It's probably 17 to 20 or whatever. But I don't see that being like where you feel like you can't live without it in 10.
Yeah. Well, I probably will never get there because I will be at that point. I'll be the old man calling my son who will be 30. And I'll be like, this metaverse is broken. It's broken. I can't get in. I'm done. I'm done. I'm not going in. It doesn't matter that you want me to get a part-time job as a greeter at Starbucks online. I'm not going in because the metaverse is broken. That's what I'll tell them.
Yeah. So I as you should, Phil. So to that point, it looks like we're getting a lot of great conversation podcast chat again. We're seeing ranges from, of course, you saw the 10 years. We're seeing ranges. Plan is to build for the next 5 to 15 is what Hook is saying. Galactic Blaze thinks 3 to 5 before Microsoft Teams and Zoom, mm-hmm. you know, get replaced. I would say more integrate, I would guess, but get replaced with the 3D VR versions, metaverse-based. And I think, we're getting T. Meyer saying that timeline is shorter based off the current state of the world. Now, that said, I tend to think that enterprise-based use cases will come first. So with that mm-hmm. timeline, that enterprise is going to be first because they can spend the money to make metaverse good.
Yeah.
Like they can spend $5,000 on a device that's good.
The entertainment sector, right? Like that, I think that's what will draw people in the most is when you can really get that immersive experience, even if it's only for the length of a movie and that's all they can stay in for. I think those will be the things that really draw them into it.
I would say enterprise, then gaming, then entertainment, then social.
Enterprise. Break down what you mean by enterprise then.
So like if you think, okay, who could afford to buy, let's say right now today, there's a $300 device and a $5,000 device, both of which take you into a virtual space.
Okay.
What's the quality difference between the $300 device and the $5,000 device?
Gotcha.
And so then the question is who can afford the $5,000 device and think that it would be worth to spend the money on? If you're a corporation, you might be able to go, okay, we've got a team of 100 people. I mean, it's nothing for us to spend $500,000. Maybe we've got a team of, 1,000 people, $5 million. What's that? Drop in the bucket. That's nothing.
Right.
$5,000 spend, $5 million for a corporation who's got $1 billion.
So you're saying basically the amount of time needs to pass for that $5,000 technology to be able to be purchased at Walmart or the equivalent in your
community. What happens then? Yeah, you got it. So what happens then is that $5,000 device provides extreme utility that offsets the cost for a corporation, or they can offset the cost by saying, look at how cool and trendy we are. Come work for us. Like they can clearly say the cost value benefit is worth $5,000 or more for this device. And then from there, the next people down are like who would be willing to spend $2,000-$4,000 on a really good device are gamers.
Yes.
So then they get into the next tier down, and that allows them to do some kind of like gaming features and, cool new things. Maybe they get the cutting edge on Fortnite or whatever it is that they're playing then, Valorant or whatever. Or some game we don't know of yet. But point being is they're willing to pay to those next level devices. And then from there, people will get into, they'll spend, $1,000, $2,000 for like really immersive. Think like whenever 3D Blu-ray came out, like really immersive, like entertainment. And then from there, it gets to like casual users. People are just like going to go visit their friends in the metaverse. Like they're going to come last because in order for them to do it, like they need to be able to put on a $300 device and not feel like they're going to throw up after they've worn it for 10 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Well, they'll just have to put an implant in your head. Don't worry about it. it'll all balance out. Everything. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, the beautiful thing about that, Phil, is anytime that you need an upgrade, you don't have to go to the store and buy it. You can just pull up the app like on your eyeballs. You can just like pull up the app that you can see in your eyes because it's straight to your brain. And then you can purchase your brain's upgrade in live time. You don't even have to go to Walmart.
Wow, it's so simple now. It's so simple. So, Mike, I have a question. If I get in the metaverse early, can I just choose my profession in the metaverse? Can I just be like, no, bro, I'm a neurosurgeon, and then I get grandfathered in when they make real licenses apply?
So you're asking me the question.
Yeah.
Can you get grandfathered in? I would say that. Yeah, I would say that you kind of have to, and I hope, and we've talked about that in a number of podcasts. I think that if I were going to try to make a $1 trillion play and I was in a position to do so, that's exactly the way that I would do it. I would basically create a conversion to grandfather everyone in, so into a new system, and I would figure out a way to monetize that without having anyone to spend any kind of money, whether I did that through grants or through some kind of government partnerships or whatever it might be. But that's exactly what I would do.
Well, that's, I'm going to be hard at work. I'm going to be figuring out what my new profession in the metaverse is going to be. And then I'm going to go in and snag it and start calling myself that. And just, although I hear the metaverse right now is a lot of closed rooms, right? Like you got to know someone, you got to know the secret code to get in. So maybe I'll wait till it opens up a bit more, but when it does, I'm going to go in and declare myself something. I'm not sure what. I'm not sure yet.
Well, you know, it's actually interesting you say that, because one of the things we didn't talk about the other day, and there was an article that Vitalik Buterin had tweeted about soulbound tokens.
What?
So, it actually makes sense. The concept of a soulbound token is like an NFT. A soulbound NFT is that there are things about you that you will always own. Think about
like, right, you say like when I'm hold on. Are you saying when I'm dying, when I die, I'm just going to be able to leave my kids an NFT of me?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you could your soul NFT. You can like, and maybe they can have like, you know how you burn tokens. They can burn that NFT, you know, metaphorically, and then they can have like an NFT urn of your soulbound tokens all being burned together, and they take the actual code from all of your soulbound tokens, and then they scramble
they throw
it
me
up
in a burn wallet.
Randomly burn bits of it.
They throw me into a burn wallet, don't they?
Yes.
Great.
So the
great. Well, I don't listen. If anybody is listening and you attend my meta funeral, I do not want to be thrown into a burn wallet with a bunch of meme coins. Okay, like I don't want that.
So you will be forever bound
to a bunch of silly ass meme coins. Yes, I don't want that.
That you loved so much.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Well,
so to explain these soulbound tokens real fast before we close out, because I know we've got a minute left and then we have to. So a soulbound token is a concept kind of like with LinkedIn, where you have different, let's say, and this isn't the only way to use it, but just I'm picking one. So with LinkedIn, you have like different attributes like great manager, 42 people certify, or whatever it might be, like proficient in Azure or JavaScript or whatever it might be. Think a degree. Like if you have a degree, I learned this thing, I got a degree. Well, that's not something that is like an NFT you purchase on OpenSea. It's like something you earned that's attached to you as an individual forever. Like you went to that college, you graduated with that degree, or you learn that thing, or you did that thing, like you have this experience. And if those things are relevant, it's creating some kind of digital profile of you that exists both in the metaverse and outside of the metaverse, or for that matter, just has to integrate with government officials. These kinds of soulbound tokens are real. The NFTs are a way for you to basically step into a situation and be like, no. Like I'm a police officer. I'm allowed on the scene of the crime or whatever.
In the metaverse?
Like, well, in both. And both.
There's crimes in the metaverse already. We're in trouble. We're not even all there. And there's already crimes. We would be in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. But if you didn't have your soulbound token, would you be allowed at the investigation? You wouldn't. So you better make sure to upload that real fast. So if your police department, if you're listening to this right now, you're a police officer, you don't have an NFT that's connected to your badge number, you probably need to tell them to work on that right away, because whenever metaverse crimes happens, you know, there you are.
I'm gonna have to cut all of this out, and we're gonna have to start a metaverse police academy.
I mean, that's actually not a bad idea. Like as because the way it was presented, it almost sounds ridiculous. But a metaverse police academy is actually probably a brilliant idea.
I'm going in
and a necessary implement.
That's it. I'm going in, and I'm going to declare myself meta sheriff.
Well, I don't think. I mean,
6 foot, please. Yeah. Everybody 6 foot apart. All right, gang, we're going to have to wrap it up. We could talk about metaverse pretty much all night because it's both intriguing and silly at the same time, but it's coming nevertheless. So, Corey, do you have any parting words for this evening?
I would just say make sure that you write your will in the metaverse for how you're going to be treated after you die, because maybe there won't be somebody listening to you talk on a podcast that knows how to treat your digital right. self. So make sure that you get your digital affairs in order.
Well, in the meat world that we live in now, or the metaverse, any friend of mine will not have any kind of rainbow sprinkles on soft serve ice cream that's served at my funeral. So that's how you'll be able to identify my friends, just so you know. So let's get out of here. Gang, we will be back here. Where are we at? We're on Wednesday. We'll be back here Friday. We're at Monday, aren't we? My goodness. Yeah, it was a long, dude. Wednesday. It was a long weekend. We're going to be back Wednesday at 8. My goodness, 8 Central. And we hope that you guys come back here and listen to us. 9 out of 10 Metaverse dentists approve of the DoiCoin podcast. So we hope that you come back. And for myself, Phil Ward, and for Corey Fico, we invite you to be kind to somebody. It certainly will be good for you, and it will change their life. So until Wednesday, have a great time.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin. The crypto coin for the people, by the people.